Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm with Nick Bunker, the historian. His new book is In the Shadow of Fear, America and the World in 1950. There are future players present on the scene. We've mentioned Eisenhower, who will be elected in 1952 and take office in 1953. The governor of Illinois is important here, Adlai Stevenson, who's seen as a moderate Democrat, a man who is part of the middle way that a professor named Schlesinger identifies as the success that America needs to find, a middle way, not the right, not the left. There's William F. Buckley, a young man just leaving Yale, who's been stifled momentarily by the leadership at Yale for giving a speech that, if you read it today, you find it very, very even-tempered. But in those days, it would have been understood as God and Man at Yale is the book that comes from it. But we need to concentrate on a man who doesn't get a great deal of credit, given that his genius is still with us. Paul Nitzer, who was tasked with constructing NSC 68. Nick, who was Paul Nitzer and what was NSC 68 to his understanding? Thank you.
Well, Paul Nitzer was a former investment banker. He'd been an investment banker in the 1930s, and then he'd gone into interwar service in Washington, where he was very involved in planning and logistics. And by 1950, he was the head of policy and planning at the State Department. He'd taken over from his predecessor, the very famous Sir George Kennan. And the two of them conducted a kind of debate about foreign policy for the next 30 or 40 years. Now, Paul Nitzer, as head of the policy and planning department of the State Department, had the job of creating a strategic document, which came to be known as NSC 68. Nitzer was the principal author of that document, but it was also something that he worked on in conjunction with Dean Acheson. So really, it was a kind of a joint document between Nitzer and Dean Acheson. Now, it was marked top secret, but like a lot of things in Washington, although it was marked top secret. In fact, there were people outside the State Department at the time and outside the Pentagon who had some inkling that there was some big rethinking going on inside those two buildings. Now, the core of NSC 68 was this. Now, it really flowed, first of all, from something else which we haven't mentioned, which is the fact that in August 1949, the Soviet Union had tested their first nuclear bomb, their first atom bomb, which they tested in Soviet Kazakhstan at the end of August. And that had been discovered by the United States because the radioactive dust from the explosion had been picked up by a B-29 bomber north of Japan. And this all, by the way, of course, is chronicled in the film, the great film Oppenheimer, which came out last year. So the revelation in the United States that the Soviet Union had an atom bomb helped to trigger a great deal of rethinking inside the State Department about what they were to do about the threat of the Soviets, particularly the threat of the Soviets in Europe. They could also see the extent to which the Soviets were continuing to build up their conventional military force as well. And so Acheson commissioned Paul Nitzer to produce what became NSC 68. And the core of this document was this, really. First of all, although it was a top secret document, it was marked top secret, it wasn't intended always to be secret. The intention was that NSC 68 would become a public document. It would be a document that would be used by Dean Acheson, by Harry Truman, to rally the American people, if you like, around a great new effort to put together the military and economic wherewithal to win the Cold War. And not only the American people, the intention of Dean Acheson and Nitzer was that NSC 68 would then be used also to sell the same kind of idea to the other Western allies, to Western allies, to the United Kingdom, to France, to Italy, to the Netherlands, and so on and so forth, with a view to kind of building up NATO on this basis. Now, the core of NSC 68 in terms of its argument was this. The argument was that the Soviet Union was devoting an enormous chunk of its national output to preparing for war. They argued, or they estimated, that the Soviet Union was spending about 15% of its annual economic output on defense. Or rather, they thought it was going to be offense. And that 15% figure was about three times what the United States was spending. Now, their worry was that by 1954 was a key date for them. They worried that by 1954, the Soviet military buildup would be such that the Soviet Union, not only with their conventional forces, but with their new atomic bombs as well, would pose an overwhelming threat to Western Europe. The Soviets might choose to invade, or alternatively, the Soviets might not actually have to invade. The Soviet Union would simply be able to display their power to the nations of Western Europe. And the danger would be that the nations of Western Europe, the NATO allies, would start peeling away from the NATO alliance. They would decide it would be much better, frankly, in the light of this kind of overwhelming superiority in munitions that Russia had. They thought they might think it would be much better to make peace with the Soviet Union. But 1954 was regarded as this key date, the date of maximum danger, where the Soviet Union would have brought its material, its war materials and its plans to maturity. The argument of NSC 68, therefore, was that in response to this, the United States had to do something similar. The United States, plus the NATO allies, had to devote a much bigger share of their national economic output to preparing for war. Now, NSC didn't actually put any figures budgetary figures into NSC 68, but it was pretty clear to anyone who followed his arguments, it was pretty clear to people who were in the know, if you like, in Washington, that it would have involved taking the American military budget, which was about $13 billion in 1949, and trebling it to something like about $39 or $40 billion within a couple of years or so. And that really was what NSC 68 was about. It was supposed to be a document that portrayed the Soviet threat in the starkest, grimmest possible terms, and then used that as the rallying call for the whole of the Western world to get together and rise to the challenge. So that was what NSC 68 was supposed to be. And what Acheson wanted to do was, having agreed the document with the president, he wanted to take that document and then use that in the autumn of 1950 and possibly early 1951 to go out to the Allies and bang the drum for this change of policy, which would have meant quite a big change in America's stance in the Cold War. It would have been a much bigger armed forces. It would have made not necessarily more aggressive, but it would have been much more determined, much more defiant, a much stronger kind of stance than it had up until then. Now, of course, what actually happened was the Korean War broke out, and so NSC 68 was to some extent overtaken by events. The huge increase in their military budget did occur during the Korean War, but it didn't occur in the kind of planned, measured way that Acheson intended, nor did he ever have the opportunity to go out and wage this kind of international public relations campaign, which is what he had been intending to do.
While the NSC 68 is being constructed, this is late winter, early spring of 1950, McCarthy has started his accusations officially, accusing some fantastic people. Dorothy Kenyon is my favorite, a woman who belonged. Was she a member of the ADA? Was that her weakness? I can't remember why it is that McCarthy chose Dorothy Kenyon, but he finally came to a point. He would name somebody and it would blow up, or he would say, I have a number, and it would not come to anything. Owen Lattimore, was that the man he settled on? Was the master spy in Russia?
That's right. That's right. Owen Lattimore was the man McCarthy picked out as being the person he portrayed as being the master Soviet agent who had infiltrated the State Department and who had decisively influenced America's thinking about such issues as Taiwan. Now, Lattimore was a very interesting character. He was an academic. He'd actually been born in China. His parents, I think, had been missionaries in China. And he knew China extremely well. He had traveled all over China in the 1920s and 1930s. He was an expert, particularly on Mongolia. He knew a great deal about the area. And he had been active as a kind of advisor to the State Department, as a kind of consultant and advisor. But he did have some views which in Washington at the time would have been regarded as pretty extreme. He'd actually written a book in 1949 called The Situation in Asia. And in that book, he had been trying to encourage the United States to reach out to communist China. He wanted them to recognize communist China immediately. He was quite sympathetic to certain aspects of the Chinese Revolution, to, for example, the aspiration of Mao Zedong towards land reform and so on. And he also said some very dismissive things about, for example, the Marshall Plan. Lattimore was very dismissive about NATO. It was a book that, in terms of the kind of Washington discourse of the year, was pretty much at the kind of radical, controversial end of the spectrum. And that left Lattimore, if you like, a little bit exposed. The other problem was that Lattimore had attended a seminar in the fall of 1949, a seminar organized by the State Department with a view to gathering expert views about the State Department's Asia policy. So Lattimore had certainly been at that meeting. He had certainly been visible. Now, some of the other people at that meeting had actually been rather taken aback by some of the things that Lattimore was saying, but nevertheless, he had been involved. And so McCarthy fastened upon Lattimore as being the person who regarded as a kind of evil genius of communism, who was, if you like, tainting and biasing the decision-making by the State Department. There was also another problem, which was that Lattimore did have some connections. Lattimore did have some connections via a thing called the Institute of Pacific Relations, which is kind of a think tank in Washington. He did have some connections with people who were arguably communist or Communist Party members, or certainly very close to the Communist Party. So Lattimore, if you like... McCarthy greatly exaggerated his importance. He portrayed him as a Soviet spy, which he almost certainly was not. But the trouble was that it left the Truman administration in a rather awkward spot, because it was possible to argue that Lattimore had been involved in influencing to some extent the policy the State Department had adopted. In particular, it was argued that Lattimore had adopted the decision by Dean Acheson not to, to help defend Taiwan.
So what we have here is... not proof that Lattimore is an agent of anyone, but what we're looking at is the tension between the State Department's vision of Asia and Taft's vision of Asia. So I'm trying to figure out what why it is that Lattimore would have been of interest to the Republican Party after they realized that that Hoover says he's in the clear. There's no agent here. But Lattimore still means is a debate. So they're using Lattimore, Taft.
Oh, yeah. It took years, by the way, for Lattimore. Lattimore had to fight very hard to clear his name. And eventually his name was cleared of this allegation of being a Soviet agent. It took him a long time. The problem we see was that at the end of 1949, Taft had really upped the ante in politics, because it was Taft who really was the first politician in Washington who made this very, very clear, this allegation that the Communist Party, the State Department, had been influenced by communists. It was really Taft was the first person to make that suggestion. And then over the coming months, that became a suggestion that was picked up by all sorts of other people, and it was developed further, much further, by McCarthy. McCarthy took that statement that Taft had made, he took it and he developed it much further, citing Lattimore as the evidence.
I'm speaking with Nick Bunker. The book is In the Shadow of Fear, America and the World in 1950. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anababe, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabe sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.